All right, ready to dive in. Today, we're going deep with Micah, one of those prophets from the Hebrew Bible, sometimes called minor.
Yeah, though that label, minor, it's a little deceiving. It's more about the length of the book, not how important the message is.
It's like saying espresso's minor just because it's a smaller serving than a latte. And trust me, Micah's prophecy is strong stuff. He wasn't some prophet, you know, tucked away safely in Jerusalem. This guy was from Morshith Gath, a small town right on the edge of the danger zone.
To really get Micah, you have to picture his world. 8th century BC, the Assyrian Empire, they're like a bulldozer just pushing westward. Aggressive expansion. Egypt's still there, a major power, though not as central in Micah's book. And caught in between, Israel and Judah. It's a deadly game they're playing.
So Micah's hometown was basically a front row seat to potential disaster, always on edge.
Exactly. And that disaster did strike. The northern kingdom, Israel, they fall to Assyria in 722 BC. Imagine that, living in Micah's town, your neighbors up north, conquered, cities destroyed, people taken away. The threat was real.
Talk about anxiety. And that's where Micah's prophecy comes in. He's not some detached observer here. He's living through it, feeling that fear. He's called to be a prophet in this time, and his message, it's got two sides. Judgment for the people's sins, but also a glimmer of hope for what could be.
And no sugarcoating either. Micah calls out the social injustice, the corruption, the worshiping of idols, especially among the leaders. He's that friend who'll tell you straight up you've got something in your teeth, even if it makes things a little awkward.
Micah's calling people out left and right. Did they actually listen?
Well, some did, some didn't, of course. But his words had a lasting impact. Think about this. A century later, another prophet, Jeremiah, he almost gets executed for prophesying Jerusalem's destruction. The elders defending him, they actually cite Micah's prophecy as precedent.
Wow, so Micah's words are basically legal ammunition 100 years later. That's wild.
It shows you how seriously prophecy was taken back then. These weren't just opinions. They were seen as coming from God himself.
And Micah delivers these pronouncements with some real dramatic flair. His language, it's raw, turbulent, like a storm about to break.
The imagery he uses is so vivid, capturing the chaos and fear of the time. Weeping, writhing, even nakedness. It's conveying this deep shame, the lament he feels for his people, and the wrong they've done.
Not exactly your feel-good, everything's-gonna-be-all-right kind of prophet, then.
Nope, not at all. Micah doesn't shy away from the tough stuff. He's like a surgeon, cutting away the infected parts to try and save the whole thing.
And I heard he got pretty creative with his language, a master of wordplay.
Absolutely. He uses puns, double meanings, to really drive his point home. Like when he condemns those false prophets who are taking payment in alcohol. He uses similar sounding words for lie and strong drink.
So he's saying their pronouncements are as reliable as someone who's had a few too many. That's harsh.
It is. He's subtly linking their pronouncements to being drunk, basically suggesting they're talking out of their hats, not from divine inspiration.
Okay, so we've got this prophet living in a world that feels like it's falling apart, delivering these intense messages of judgment and hope. What strikes me is that Micah was speaking to a specific time, but what he's saying still feels relevant today. Corrupt leaders, social injustice, trying to stay faithful, those are still issues.
That's what's so fascinating about Micah. He's not just some historical figure. He speaks to the human experience, those challenges we face in every generation. That's why we're doing this deep dive with you, to understand Micah's world, what he was saying, and how it connects to us today.
All right, we've set the scene. We get a sense of the chaos of Micah's world and the power of his prophecy. Let's dig into some of those specific messages now. What's our first stop on this Micah tour?
Well, first thing to understand is that Micah wasn't just all doom and gloom. He really did love his people. It wasn't just condemnation. It was lamenting the path they were on, one that was leading to destruction. To get that lament, we need to look at how he describes the social and religious landscape of his time.
Okay, let's unpack that. What was Micah seeing that upset him so much, and why should we today care about it?
He saw a society where the rich and powerful were taking advantage of those who were weak and vulnerable. Corruption in the legal system, greed everywhere, complete disregard for God's covenant, for his commandments. The nation had lost its moral compass, and Micah knew judgment was coming.
And how does this connect to us living in the 21st century? Is Micah just some ancient guy scolding us from the past?
Not exactly. What's fascinating is that Micah's critiques have this timeless quality to them. Abuse of power, the gap between the rich and the poor, truth and justice being eroded. These are things we're dealing with too. He's calling us to examine our own lives, our communities, to see if we're falling into the same traps that led to Judah's downfall.
So less about the specific historical events and more about these underlying patterns of human behavior.
Precisely. Micah's holding up a mirror to humanity, showing us what happens when greed and selfishness take over, when we don't care about the well-being of others. He's asking us to consider how our actions impact not just ourselves, but the whole community, even the whole world.
That's powerful stuff. Okay, we've got the big picture. Let's zoom in a bit. How did Micah actually deliver these messages? What made his style so unique and effective?
Well, one thing that jumps out is the way he uses vivid imagery and metaphors drawn from everyday life. He talks about farmers cheating their neighbors, shepherds neglecting their flocks, women being forced to sell their children into slavery. These concrete images make those abstract ideas of justice and righteousness come to life.
So making it real, connecting with their lived experience, makes sense. It's one thing to talk about big ideas, another to show how those ideas play out in people's actual lives. What else?
He uses dialogue a lot and dramatic irony. He'll create these back and forth exchanges between God, the people, sometimes even inanimate objects. It's like a play, a courtroom drama, where God is both the judge and the one bringing the case.
Okay, I'm intrigued. Example.
Sure. In chapter 6, Micah sets up this scene. God's putting Israel on trial. He reminds them of everything he's done for them, rescuing them from slavery in Egypt, guiding them through the wilderness, giving them the promised land. And then he asks, "What does the Lord require of you? To act justly, love mercy, and walk humbly with your God."
Wow, that's powerful. It's like God saying, "Look, I've done all this, and all I ask is for you to live justly and compassionately." Simple, but it cuts right to the core of what it means to have a relationship with God.
Exactly. And that leads us to another key element of Micah's style, rhetorical questions. He's constantly challenging his listeners, forcing them to confront what they believe and how they're behaving.
So not just preaching at them, but making them part of the conversation, making them think for themselves.
Precisely. He wants them to really wrestle with what their choices mean, to see that their actions have consequences, not just for themselves, but for everyone.
Okay, I'm starting to get why Micah is so compelling, even after all this time. It's deeper than just the specific events of his time. He's talking about being human, that struggle between selfishness and compassion, justice and injustice.
Exactly. And that's why his message is still relevant today.
Welcome back to our Micah Deep Dive.
We've been exploring, Micah's pretty intense message about the social injustices of his time, the judgment he's proclaiming.
Yeah, no holding back there. But you mentioned there's another side to his prophecy, something about hope.
Right. Micah's not all doom and gloom. Mixed in with those pronouncements, there's this thread of promise, a vision of restoration, a future with hope.
Okay, color me intrigued. What did hope look like for Micah?
Well, for him, it wasn't just about dodging punishment. It was about transformation, getting things right with God, renewing that covenant faithfulness.
Covenant faithfulness? That sounds kind of heavy. What does that even mean?
Think of it like this. In ancient Israel, the covenant was like this sacred agreement between God and his people. God promised blessings, protection, and the people. They promised to follow his laws, to live justly.
So when they strayed from that, when they started exploiting the poor or worshiping idols, they were breaking that agreement.
Exactly. And that's where Micah steps in. He's reminding them of what they're supposed to be doing, calling them to repent, and offering a vision of what could be if they return to a life of faithfulness.
Okay, so what did this what could be actually look like?
He paints this picture of the future, God's people back in their land, peace and justice prevailing, even the nations coming together in unity, worshiping.
Sounds pretty utopian. Was he talking about some kind of earthly paradise?
It's not so much about material wealth or political power. It's more about spiritual renewal, a world transformed by God being present, by his grace. He uses those classic images for peace. Swords into plowshares, spears into pruning hooks.
So not just ending war, but creating a world where violence doesn't even make sense, where people are in harmony with each other, with creation.
Exactly. Micah envisions this world where God's justice flows like a river, righteousness like a powerful stream.
That's a beautiful image. But how does any of this connect to us today? Are we supposed to just wait around for some global utopia?
It's not really about some specific event in the future. It's more those principles he's highlighting, justice, peace, reconciliation. It's a call to action, an invitation to be part of God's work, of bringing healing to the world, making things whole.
You're saying Micah's vision of hope isn't just some pie-in-the-sky dream. It's a challenge to live differently, work for justice and peace in our own time.
Exactly. It's a reminder that even in all the mess and brokenness, we can be agents of hope, bringing about God's shalom.
I'm seeing the connection now. But Micah's hope doesn't stop there, right? Didn't he have some pretty famous prophecies about a future leader?
You're thinking of the Bethlehem prophecy in chapter 5.
Yeah, that one. The one everyone talks about. What's the big deal with it?
Well, on the surface, it seems pretty straightforward. A prediction about a ruler from Bethlehem. But his language suggests something much bigger, something, well, cosmic.
Like what?
He says this leader, his origins are from of old, from ancient days. It's like he's hinting at something divine, this connection to eternity that makes this ruler different from everyone else.
So not just any political leader, but someone who embodies God's presence, his power.
Exactly. And centuries later, this prophecy gets applied to Jesus. By the Magi, those wise men searching for the newborn king.
Oh, right. The story from the Gospels. So Micah, even though he was writing hundreds of years before Jesus, was seen as pointing toward him.
Exactly. It shows how Micah's words went beyond his own time. They were talking about something deeper, something that resonated across time and culture.
Wow, that's pretty mind-blowing. So Micah's hope wasn't just about changing society or politics. It was ultimately about the Messiah coming, the one who'd bring true peace and restoration.
That's a powerful way to put it. Micah's vision was rooted in this idea of God's covenant faithfulness. Even though Israel had strayed, even though judgment was coming, he believed God would keep his promises. Send a deliverer, a shepherd, to gather his scattered flock, lead them into a new time of peace and righteousness.
Okay, I'm starting to see how all this fits together. Micah's message, it's like a tapestry woven with all these threads. Judgment and hope, lament and promise. And at the center, this unshakable belief in God's love and faithfulness, even when his people totally mess things up.
That's a great summary. He doesn't shy away from the hard stuff, but he always points us toward the possibility of redemption, the hope of a future transformed by God's grace.
So, Micah, speaking truth to power, calling out injustice, offering hope grounded in God's faithfulness. But how did he actually communicate all of this? What was so unique, so effective about his style?
Well, Micah, he was a master with language. Vivid imagery, powerful metaphors, clever wordplay. He makes his message come alive.
We touched on that a bit earlier, but any more examples?
Sure. The way he uses agricultural imagery stands out. Farmers cheating their neighbors with rigged scales or moving boundary markers. Corrupt leaders compared to shepherds who fleece their flocks don't care for them. He even uses a woman giving birth to describe the nation's pain, the anguish under judgment.
So he's taking everyday stuff, things people understand, to illustrate these spiritual truths.
Exactly. Abstract becomes concrete. Spiritual becomes tangible. It makes the message hit harder, stick with you.
And it's not just the imagery. Micah's language, it's got a certain rhythm, a cadence, almost like poetry.
He uses parallelism, repetition, all these literary techniques to create a powerful feeling. And it gets personal. Expresses his own grief, lamenting the sins of his people, weeping over their brokenness, pleading with them to turn back to God.
He's not just observing from a distance then, he's invested in their well-being, heartbroken over their choices, desperate to see them on a better path.
Exactly. And that makes it so compelling. It's coming from a place of real love, genuine concern.
Okay, I'm getting a sense of his style now. A poet, a prophet, a passionate voice for justice, whatever it takes to get his message across.
Exactly. He's like a master chef, you know, blending all these ingredients, imagery, metaphor, wordplay, emotion, to create something challenging but also nourishing.
We've covered a lot of ground. Micah's world, his message of judgment and hope, his unique prophetic style. But before we wrap this up, let's zoom out a bit. Big picture, what are the key takeaways from Micah we can apply to our lives today?
That's a great question. One of the biggest takeaways is that God cares deeply about justice and righteousness. Micah reminds us our actions have consequences, not just for ourselves, but for the whole community, the world even. He challenges us to live in a way that reflects God's heart, especially for the poor, the oppressed, those pushed to the margins.
So it's not just about personal piety. It's about how we treat each other, how we build our societies, how we use what we have, our power and resources.
Exactly. He's calling us to be agents of justice, to be peacemakers in our own time and place, and reminding us that even in the mess, the brokenness, there's always hope. God's always working, seeking to redeem, to restore what's been lost.
So it's a challenging message, but encouraging too. Calls us out, but offers this vision of a future transformed by God's grace, and reminds us we can be a part of making that happen.
Precisely. It's an invitation to be part of God's work, this ongoing work of healing and reconciliation.
Micah talks a lot about the danger of false prophets. How can we tell the difference between the real deal and the fake? And why should we even care?
That's a great question, a really important one. Micah's time, there were a lot of self-proclaimed prophets out there making all sorts of claims. Not all of them were legit.
So how did people know who to trust?
Well, Micah gives us some clues. He says a true prophet speaks truth to power, even when it's unpopular, even dangerous. They don't just tell people what they want to hear, they challenge them to face their sin, to turn back to God.
It's not just about predicting the future, then. It's about aligning your life with God's will, speaking truth, living justly.
Exactly. Micah says a true prophet, their words are backed up by their actions, they live what they preach, and their message always aligns with God's character, with love, justice, mercy.
That makes sense. So a true prophet is deeply rooted in God's word, lives with integrity, speaks truth boldly, even when it's hard.
Precisely. And why should we care about this? In a world where everyone's claiming to have the truth, it's more important than ever to be able to tell who's really speaking from a place of wisdom, of authority.
Good point. We're bombarded with information, opinions from every direction. It's easy to get lost in all the noise, swayed by smooth talkers or flashy personalities. But Micah reminds us to test things, weigh what we're hearing against God's truth.
Exactly. We have to be discerning listeners, asking ourselves, is this lining up with what I know about God? Does it promote justice and righteousness? Does it lead toward healing, towards reconciliation?
Those are great questions to keep in mind as we navigate this complex world. And a good reminder that figuring out what's true, it's not just for scholars or theologians. It's something we all need to be doing every day.
Absolutely. We need to develop that discerning ear, a heart that's in tune with God's voice, so we can tell the difference between truth and deception.
Okay, I think we've covered a lot here. Micah's world, his message, his style, and why it matters to figure out true prophecy. But there's one more piece to consider. He lived in a very specific time, but what he said still resonates today. Why is that? What makes his message timeless, relevant for us now in the 21st century?
Great question. And it's something we'll dig into in the final part of our deep dive. Join us next time as we explore the lasting legacy of Micah's prophecy and how his words can challenge, inspire, and even transform us today.
Welcome back for the final part of our Micah deep dive. We've explored his life, his message, his style, even how to spot a true prophet.
Quite a journey through ancient Israel. But it's amazing how much his words still speak to us, even after all this time.
That's what I keep thinking about. Why should we today care what some 8th century BC prophet had to say? What makes it so timeless?
One thing is his focus on justice and righteousness. It's like these core principles. He wasn't just talking about problems back then, but something deeper, something that goes beyond time and culture.
So it's not just ancient history or religious rules. It's about those values that make a society decent, humane.
Exactly. Micah reminds us that God cares how we treat each other, especially those who are vulnerable. The poor, oppressed, marginalized. He wants us to look at ourselves, our communities, and ask, are we living out God's heart for justice?
You know, it's funny. We think of prophets as these doom and gloom guys, but Micah, he's different.
Tough, yeah. But there's this real compassion, a longing for his people to turn back to God, to really flourish.
That's a great point. It's not just condemnation, it's restoration. He wants his people to thrive, to have that full life that comes from being right with God, right with each other.
So not just rule following, something deeper, connected to what makes us human. Exactly. Micah's speaking to those deep desires we all have, meaning purpose, connection, wanting a world with love and justice.
I get why his message lasts. It's something universal, speaks across the centuries.
That's its power. It's not just the past. It's about who we are, who we're meant to be, what kind of world we're making.
It's easy to feel overwhelmed by all the bad stuff in the world, the injustice, the brokenness, like one step forward, two steps back. But Micah, he seems to say even small acts of faithfulness matter.
Absolutely. He reminds us we don't need some fancy position to make a difference. We can all be agents of change, right where we are, our families, work, communities.
So not waiting for a revolution or a miracle. It's about those everyday choices we make, the kindness, the justice that can ripple out and make the world a better place.
Precisely. Micah is calling us to covenant faithfulness, to commit to living justly, compassionately, even when it's hard, even when no one's watching.
I love that. Covenant faithfulness, not blind obedience, but a relationship, working with God to heal, to restore.
Beautifully put. It's saying yes to being part of God's work, bringing shalom to the world.
So wrapping up our Micah deep dive, here's a question for you listening. Micah called out corruption, called for justice, but also called people back to that covenant faithfulness. What would it look like for us to do that today? What small act of faithfulness right where you are could make a difference? Maybe speaking up, helping those in need, just being kind in everyday moments.
Those are great examples. It's about aligning our lives with God's heart for justice, for mercy, and letting those values flow out into the world in what we say, what we do.
Perfectly said. And with that, we conclude our deep dive into Micah, the prophet from outside the Beltway. We encourage you to read his book, let his words challenge you, inspire you, and think about how you can live out his message, justice, faithfulness, and hope in your own life.
Until next time, keep diving deep and keep seeking truth.